And Trigger is the only Trigger. Like, there is no other. He is a rescue. He was in a shelter, and they actually went and got him brought him and trained him. And so I will say we saved each other's life.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. This episode is brought to you by these sponsors.
Navigating the college journey can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. At College Knowledge Foundation, we're here to guide students and families every step of the way. From choosing the right college to crafting standout essays and understanding financial aid, our virtual sessions and free consultations provide the tools you need to succeed. Join the growing community of students and families who've discovered how to take control of their college journey. Visit College Knowledge Foundation to learn more, book a session, or explore our free resources today.
Modern Gent Customs is your go-to for all your custom apparel and headwear needs. From individuals to businesses, with no minimums or design fees ever, inquire today at info@moderngentcustoms.com.
Are you in the mood for some mouth-watering Italian dinners? Homemade bread, cheese steaks, hot subs, cold subs, salads, sides, and of course, delicious pizza? Look no further than Angelo's, located at 1032 South 5th Ave, Lebanon. Call 717-273-8579 to place your order now.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Today, we have Rebecca Gundrum, retired Navy veteran who started her own company, Triggered 22. Rebecca, welcome to episode 33 of the American Grown Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
I'm glad you can make it in, especially with June being PTSD month. And for those that don't know, post-traumatic stress disorder.
That's right.
So some of the topics that we want to kind of hit on, 20 years in the Navy.
That's right. 20
That's
years.
That's phenomenal. Thank you for your service.
Thank
Seriously.
You.
You've been diagnosed with PTSD.
4 years ago.
4 years ago. Okay. We want to talk about that, you know, educate the listeners, spread the word really. And then also talk about starting your own company, Triggered 22, and you actually brought your service dog,
That's right.
Trigger.
Yep.
Awesome. Perfect. Okay. And Chuck's here as well.
Yep.
He's hey, Chuck,
too.
He's back there. Perfect. What was your early childhood like? Where did you grow up?
Yep.
What did you do in high school? Any sports? Things like that?
Sure. Grew up right here in Lancaster County. I went to Ephrata High School. I did cheerleading for about, I think, 4 years. So pretty much my whole high school career, if you would. I had an awesome childhood, awesome life. I have 5 other brothers and sisters, so total of 6 of us, and just really close-knit and supportive. In fact, from my childhood till this point, they are the reason that I was able to successfully get to this point, because even when I was gone for 20 years, they were super supportive of me. So
yeah.
My parents still live in the house I grew up in, so Very it's kind cool. of nice just, you know, coming home is coming home for me. So every time I'd come home on leave or whatever, it was back to my childhood, back to my roots, you know. So this is my home.
And to have that core base to count on.
Yep.
It had to be huge while you're overseas, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. While I was overseas, and even when I was, because most of the time I was just stateside, but just having that kind of support and knowing, you know, you can always come home was super helpful.
That's nice to have that. So why did you join the Navy? What motivated you to sign up?
Despite me having an awesome childhood and, you know, great family and stuff, there was always something more for me. I knew that. And I didn't know exactly what that was. I shocked probably, you know, people, but I was going to art school. I do art. That's what I was going to do. I do paintings. In fact, I sell them now. So that was my road. And then I got a call from the recruiter and I told my mom, I said, will you please go with me to the recruiting office? She said, as long as you don't sign paperwork. I said, I promise. So that was a Friday afternoon. Monday, I signed up. I just knew there was something out there for me. I wanted to see something bigger than myself and do something more. Now, my dad is a veteran as well.
Okay.
Now, an Army veteran, so we won't hold that against you,
Dad.
I was
going to ask what branch. Okay. But yeah, so, shout out to Dad. That's
exactly.
Awesome.
So
thank
he
you for your
in,
service, sir.
And so kind of had that in my blood, you know, I think. So when I went into the service, it was just not necessarily Navy was I ambitious about, but just doing something and serving my country was a big deal to me.
That was going to be my next question. Why the Navy?
Because they don't run as much.
That's a good answer.
I mean,
answer.
I'm not lying. Like, yeah. I'm not a super big runner, and the other ones were 3 milers, you know, the Army, the Marine Corps and stuff. So I went to the Navy. That was the recruiter that called me to. In fact, while I was in that stage, they have a... of going into boot camp, they have a thing called the delayed entry program. So that's when they're getting ready to start your boot camp class and stuff. So you can go with your recruiter, meet up and stuff. Well, during that time, 9/11 happened. I went into the Navy in October the next month. So my mom's like, I don't know if this is a good idea. I said, this is a perfect idea. You know, I'm going.
That was the time. Yeah,
it was.
And would you say that propelled you to do so? You know, I mean, you're already signed up. But
right.
What do you think?
It didn't scare me.
It didn't scare you?
Not at all. Because it scared my mom, and I love you, Mom. I know she, you know, didn't want us gone. All of my siblings live here, local. I mean, we grew up together and stuff, and I was gone. I was the one who was gone. So I know it was difficult, but there's just something bigger and a calling, you know, and I kind of felt like that my whole life.
Definitely shout out to moms out there. Moms rule the world. Like
that's right.
You know. All right, so you sign up, you know, you go to the recruiter's office. Did they try to talk you out of it? I don't see. I'm not a service member.
Yeah.
You know, I have friends. I have a buddy that was a Marine, and he shared some stories with me and things like that.
Yeah.
But what, like, can you walk us through that process? You go in.
Yep.
How does it work? You know, especially I think all branches are looking for new recruits.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. Oh yeah, the recruiter's job is to get us in, right? It's a sales pitch, if you would, you know, and I get it. That's what they do. And they show you all these wonderful pictures and this thing. It's nothing like what they say.
Isn't it?
No.
Really?
I mean, I'm sure it is for some, but my whole experience was not the typical.
So when you say that, do they kind of overhype it or?
I would say so. I would say yes and no. I mean, I definitely hit all the benefits that the military provided, medical, free education. I took advantage of that. I got my degree while I was in. But they definitely do. That's their job to get you in. And then once you're in the door and you're shipped off to boot camp, you know, the process begins. But they assign you to your first duty station or you go to your schooling, you know, and then from there I was doing 4 and out.
Okay.
That was my goal. I had no intention of doing 20 and retiring. That wasn't I just wanted to do something, right? But I never been on a ship.
Wait, so you're originally going in with the mindset of 4 and out.
4 and out.
But you're in for 20.
I did.
Okay, so we're going to have to get into some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like anything. I think people, you know, your job and you get, that's what, next thing you know, 30 years have gone by,
time
right?
Flies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, kids and stuff, you have these, like I said, the benefits of what it was. And I like the structure. I like structure and I loved serving my country. I got to do all kinds of cool things, you know, really diverse career. So, yeah, it worked for me. So I knew I was 20 and done, though. I wasn't going a day over that. That was it for me.
That was a hard stop. 20 and done.
That's right.
So now for the listeners, you know, the daily routine, what's that kind of like, you know, when you first get to boot camp?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's different depending on who you are and what you know, your end state is. For boot camp, it's pretty much the same. You know, it's and now it's different. I guess it's a lot easier. But, you know, every day, all day, working out. We go to school and do, you know, classes and things like that. A lot of marching, a lot of working out. And then the day-to-day, once you're past all that to, like, your first duty station, definitely depends on what your job in the Navy is and what you're doing, right? Because the ship's completely different than shore duty. So most of my career was spent on shore duty in the States. I was stationed the East Coast, West Coast, and in between, all over. But I never did overseas until my Iraq tour. So 9 to 5, I would say, with the exception of in-betweens, there were sometimes, you know, it was longer days. But my career was pretty much a pretty structured and, you know, normal get up in the morning, leaving, you know, 9 to 5 job. It just depends where you are and what you're doing.
Understood. And boot camp, is that to kind of weed out the ones that aren't going to make it?
Sure. Break you down to build you back up. That's 100% what it is. And teamwork and to teach you the values and things like that. And absolutely, I'm sure they do weed out a lot of people because not everyone makes it through. Yeah, I would say for me, boot camp was super easy. I know a lot of people go into that and stuff. At first, you get off the bus and they're yelling and you're like, okay, I made a mistake. I'm ready to go home. Yeah, I'm done. But then once the structure and the schedule, and you get on that, you know, drumbeat of what the days are, super simple for me. You know, I like structure and like the learning things, and it went really fast.
And you could excel with that structure.
I did. Yep.
Let's talk about your first deployment. I know you mentioned Iraq, and can you share with us some of those stories and what you experienced over there?
Yes, I can. So for me, unlike a lot of veterans that deploy overseas, a lot of our Marines and Army, you know, this is what they do all the time. I'm a Navy yeoman female. It's not what we do all the time, right? Okay. So it was very different. But what the Navy started doing was called IAs, which is individual augmentees. What we were doing was we were subbing in for the Army or the Marines so they could have a break from a deployment or, you know, because they were going like every 6 months.
Wow.
So it was not the norm. I got on the short list in 2011 of personnel that could go, and I was like, I'm ready. Like, let's do this. My brother was in the Marine Corps, and I know he did a deployment to Fallujah prior to that. So it was really important to me to give back and do my part. So, yeah, I remember volunteering, and I got the orders, and I was like, crap, this is real. It's like going to happen, you know. So I deployed with the Army. I was in the Navy, but I wore an Army uniform. So I went to Fort Jackson for my training, shot a lot of guns, which was really awesome, ate a lot of MREs, which I really enjoyed too. And it was just a really cool experience for me. And then from there, I deployed over. I went as an individual. Typically, they go in units, right? So like it was a whole unit.
That's what I was
going to
ask. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
So there was a bunch of us, but most of them were going to Afghanistan. I think there was just a few left of us going to Iraq. So yeah, I went by myself. I mean, they obviously flew me over there, but landed in Balad is where I went first. And I was supposed to land in Baghdad. I was supposed to be in Balad. So I was in Baghdad in the base, in the FOB. And I was like, I'm not supposed to be here. How do I get up there? Because my relief was waiting for me. So it took a couple days, and I was kind of just wandering the streets of the base down there. But they got me up there ultimately. And when you fly over there, you wear all your what they call battle rattle, right? So you have your helmet, your vest on,
like
and
your
all
full
those
kit,
things. Exactly.
Something like that. Okay.
Yep. And that's what you fly in the C-130s and everything like that. So this warrant officer comes to pick me up and says, "You got your plane." And I had all my battle rattle on, ready to go, 4 sea bags worth of stuff. And he's like, "You don't need all your gear on." I said, "Okay." I was like, "That's kind of strange."
Yeah,
exactly.
That seems real strange.
He goes, "Well, you must be pretty important because you're flying in the 4-star general's plane." And I'm like, "I'm not important, I assure you, and I have no idea how I got here." So I got to take the 4-star general Austin's plane up there.
So what was that? What's that like?
It was just a personal jet.
Okay, but so it's just like a nice,
correct,
kind of comfier jet where I'm picturing, like, you know, normally in the movies,
right?
You know, the soldiers are sitting in the back,
that's
and
right.
the door goes up
that's
and down,
right.
and if you jump out, you got to have a parachute, you know, because
right.
you're going down.
And so, that's what I went in for other times. This just happened to be one of those things, you know.
Wow.
So it was like really crazy, but finally made it up to Balad, you know, and I'll tell you. That first night when I checked in, you check in and you go to what they call choose, which is like your own little housing unit. It's like a trailer in essence, and
okay.
they're divided into rooms. And I was by myself. So that night we were mortared. It was called Mortaritaville. We got mortared by them all the time.
What?
And I remember just thinking, like, I am going to die, right? I'm never going to go home because it was terrifying and I didn't know what to expect. Obviously, it was the first night up. So that started it. And then as time went on, got easier, you know. It was day to day, you know, typical 15-20 hour days is what we did, but that's all we did.
Yeah.
It was mission driven. So
okay.
I thoroughly enjoyed my time in mission and doing those things. I got to see a lot of cool things, went in a Black Hawk for the first time and mission with that, and shot off a drone over the country, and you know, so seeing and doing a lot of things, but I didn't know the repercussion of all of those things and things you see and deal with, what it was going to lead to, you know, 8 years later.
Let's back up a little bit because I got a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
How did the Army soldiers, how did they take to a Navy person coming into their ranks?
Right.
Was that like a big deal or not really?
Not really. I personally didn't really deal with much of them. My job over there was working with the linguists and Terps.
Okay.
So we dealt with the Terps that went out on missions with our SEALs and everyone, you know, to the linguist support for our guys out there on mission. So it was only myself, another Navy officer. I had one Army person that worked for me, one Air Force, and one civilian.
Okay.
So that was my genre.
So was your group. Yeah.
That's right. And what they sent me over there for was to be the non-commissioned officer in charge. So an E6 in essence in the Navy to being second in command of the office, the senior officer over there. So didn't deal much with that. Didn't have any issues fitting in. I mean, no problems and stuff. I got saluted a lot because the Navy's rank structure is different than the Army, like what we wear.
So you're a higher rank?
Well, because we wear a crow as part of our rank structure. So I was an E6. Well, in the Army, it looked like a colonel. So I would get saluted all the time and stuff. I'm like, I assure you, I'm not that old and I'm not that high rank.
Yeah, right.
But so that was an experience, right? Because they saw my uniform. I wore their Army uniform, you know. And so to them, that was foreign. But that was kind of funny.
Interesting. Now you get to your location. You called it Mortar Rigaville?
Oh, Mortar Rigaville. I have a t-shirt that says it. Yeah, just because we were mortared almost every single day. Any listener out there who's been stationed over there in Balad would know. Just typical, the Taliban or the people outside the wire. And some of them hid inside the wire. I mean, we've had some close calls while I was there.
So inside the wire is literally inside the compound where you're stationed.
That's right.
Wow.
Yep.
And I don't want to, but it's okay. For the listeners, what is that like? Like you see on the movies and Michael Bay films, right? Yep. Huge explosions.
Yep.
Is it anything like that?
Yeah. You know, in my head, when I first was in my CHU sitting there and we got hit because we have CWIS or CRAMs go off. So we have these big guns that try to shoot those mortars down. Right?
Like a
so
defensive system.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you hear that firing, you hear these things on the ground. And honestly, all I could think of War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise, that movie in my head, right? It's obviously not like that, but that's what it sounded like. It was just chaos, right? So, not supposed to open your doors or look out or anything like that. You're supposed to just get down and cover your head, you know. But I had to see, like, what is going on?
Yeah.
But, like, in my head, that's what still plays. If I think back to that time, you know, it was just chaos. And then you hear the jets flying because they do missions, you know, 24 hours. Our jets over there, so you just hear them going off. So it's a lot of chaos. Yeah.
And you said it got easier. So what what about that got easier?
I think it just became, it's just numbing, right? I mean, 3 months in, that's your world. And to be very to the point, I accepted my own mortality. Like, I'm here for a purpose. Like, this is what I'm doing. And you just kind of like, because there was times when people would wake up and the CHUs where we stayed in the house, they were completely tore apart. You know, they didn't even know. I mean, they're just made of metal or, you know, different things. And so you accept it and you do your, you know, you do what you're there for and you just keep going and grinding and it just becomes, I don't, that's the only way I can describe it, is numbing. You get so involved in your routine and what you're there for and, you know, it becomes a way of life.
I was going to say, almost sounds like second nature, even though it's so far out there for a civilian or average person to hear or believe, but yet you're living it. It's day in and day out. So now, is there a mission that really stood out to you? You know, you said you got to go on a helicopter, you know.
Yeah, like I only went outside the wire that one time. My mission was inside the compound for the most part. But I did want to experience what I was there for, you know, and I wanted to be. So I actually got to take one of the mission down from Balad down south. And we just flew a piece that had to go down there for one of the drones. What I found was crazy about that is just I was told to not sit in certain seats because some of the personnel that go on those with you do not deodorize or shower or anything. So if that wind hits, it goes right in your face.
Really?
So they warned me. So I got a good seat on that. But just like, and the view from there was crazy. Like, I mean, just seeing like what a different place like that was. And I also, while I was over there, when I flew back, I didn't come back on the Black Hawk. I came back on a different type of aircraft, but it flew so low. They didn't have, it wasn't pressurized, right? So they had to fly low. And I remember sitting there on the ground and I saw these things lighting up out the windows, and I remember my heart sank because I'm like, this cannot be good. Well, here it was our guys shooting flares to make sure there's no one shooting up at us.
Oh, okay. So that is good. Okay. Yeah, it was good. That's real good.
It was
good
for us. Yeah. But then the one gentleman, or the one army guy who was over there with us, he or in the plane, he said, "Do you want to see with the night vision goggles?" I said, 100%. I want to see this. So we got to put those on and look over, you know. It was really cool to see that and just the experience of that, because I normally wouldn't have got to do any of that as a Navy yeoman, you know.
Right. And while you're over there, you had an interpreter, you said? Or you were a part of like a group with an interpreter?
So we were the ones who managed all the terps over there, meaning like we managed them, like you need to be here to go on the mission with mission or these. So we didn't physically see them. We just were managing their billets, if you would, or where they would go. So there was different types of interpreters over there. Some of them were just local nationals that walked right in the FOB to help us. And then others were top secret clearances, and they were to help, you know, the higher ranking or different types of missions.
So pretty crucial.
It was, in part, because
they have to be able to communicate to the locals there, you know, to say what's going on and then relay it to the troops.
That's right.
And try to keep everything smooth.
Right. And honestly, I didn't know. I mean, when you do something just like anybody would, you just do your best, you know, and you're doing. I didn't realize what the impact of, you know, everybody's position over there and how big of a deal it really is, you know. But every piece matters because it's all part of a bigger, you know, puzzle.
Exactly.
That's right.
You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say it's like a big puzzle.
Right.
So your 20 years comes up, you're done. What was it like then transitioning to civilian life?
Easy.
Easy.
I was done. I mean, I miss pieces of what that all that was. But if I'm being transparent, my last duty station was not good. Not typical for what a retired retirement should be. It just was very chaotic, and my commanding officer was relieved of her post and stuff. So it was just it was time to go. Very survival mode my last year. However, 2 years prior to that, I was already prepping for what I was doing when I got out, right? Everybody asks you, what are you doing when you get out? You're getting a government job, you know, the typical, no, I'm not. Because I was diagnosed with my PTSD while I was still in the service.
How did you discover you had PTSD?
Yeah, so I didn't know when I came back I was different. I honestly didn't. But as soon as I came home and started going back into normal life, I started having symptoms that I didn't realize until my oldest daughter pointed them out. Like in crowds, I would get my hands would sweat, or I'd be like, I'm going to pass out, or my heart would thump really bad, or anxiety and stuff. And crowds would do that to me, loud noises, different things would just peak this like whatever. And I guess I got this look. She would say a look. Finally, she said, Mom, you have to go get help. Now, who wants to go talk about any of this stuff, right? So the military offers you help, quote unquote. When you get out, you have to go through, you know, these questionnaires and stuff. But they're just generic questionnaires. You know, they're not really delving into what our issues are because everybody's different and how they handle trauma and stress. So I was not on a base. So in order to go get help or go see a therapist or a mental health doctor, I had to go out in town. It's really difficult to get what you need. And the stigma of the service is tough, right? You're trained to be tough and mission oriented. And I was a chief, so an E7 at the time. And there's always threats. Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose my clearance if I go get help? Or they put me on medicine? Or, oh my gosh, what's wrong? You know, if they say something's wrong with me, what are people going to think, right? We all go through that.
Yeah.
But I went and got help. And I went 2 years every Monday for 2 years straight to the same doc. And it's started opening up the doors of, you know, talking about this. My diagnosis came within 2 months. It was pretty cut and dry what I was.
Pretty clear.
It was.
And what's your, if you don't mind sharing, your oldest daughter's name?
Taylor.
Yep. Shout out to Taylor, because, you know, it does take a lot, I think, for anybody to admit, hey, I need help.
Yeah.
Whether it's whatever it is, alcohol, drugs, whatever it is. Hey, I need to do something about this.
That's right. And she had to grow up way too quick. Because of her mom. And I lived with Gil for a while for that, but she definitely, you know, is a very strong young lady, and my, you know, and really when she said that, she's very direct, and, you know, and like I said, I was reluctant. I don't need help. I got this. But I tried to get this. I tried to control it, if you would, and I'm sure others who have my situation understand what I'm saying. I couldn't. I literally couldn't. And if people look at me or that my demeanor, my family, Rebecca's tough, you know, she got it and stuff. I didn't have it. I did not have it. So
you had a facade, like I feel like many would, you know, you feel like you can control it and everything. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you remember, was there a certain event, you know, looking back over the 20 years of service that you recall, that was it the mortar strikes in the middle of the night? You know, did they even say, like, hey, this might have been the moment it happened? Or you just think it's throughout your whole career in the service?
I think it was definitely my 2011 deployment, because a lot of the things, I looking back, I wasn't that person before. And I started just living with it, or being this new version of myself, because I remember coming back and saying, when will I be normal again? You come back and you just have to start your life again. Well, how do you do that? You know, it's really hard when you're in this, you know,
structure.
Exactly.
You know, and Yeah.
And so
things are second nature that normally aren't second nature.
Well, and how do you like watch your six for 24 hours a day, and all of a sudden now you don't watch your six, or you're not, you know, paranoid, or your head's on a swivel? How do you stop those thoughts?
Right.
I don't know. I couldn't. it's your safe. That's your safety. So, I think that a lot of people come back and, you know, you get back into it and you survive and you keep going and stuff. But then that's when the substance abuse and the other things come in because you need something to cope. I can't sleep. I have nightmares, you know, or this got me or this triggered me and I had an episode. I mean, when I have an episode, I'm out for 24 to 48 hours, meaning mentally just drained, like I ran a marathon. But there wasn't one pinpoint thing that they said that was the cause of it. I think it was a culmination of the entire deployment. Yeah.
Understood. And now some of your triggers you had mentioned, I know with 4th of July coming up, for a lot of service members, it's fireworks and things like that.
Yes.
Do you have...
Hate it.
Yeah.
So no, I don't. I struggle with it. I do, but my youngest 2 years ago wanted to go to the fireworks. And one thing I refuse to do is let PTSD rule who I am. Like I accept it for being part of me now, but I'm not going to let that stop me from doing things. Now I do go into things knowing this is going to suck, but how do I get through it? Right. So we went to the fireworks. I always make sure I have another adult with me, but my mom was with me at the time and my sister and my little one. And we're walking up to go to the fireworks, and they're popping off, you know, just before the show starts. And I completely lost my stuff. I cried to almost hyperventilate because it's really a struggle for me. And my sister's like, what do we do? Do I go back? No, you keep going. Just keep going. Just lead me and I'll be okay, right? My mom's seen me have episodes before, so she was a little familiar. Once we got there and I sat and could see my surroundings and that I'm safe, we're good. I can enjoy it.
Yeah, it's like going through the storm, you know, there's going to be a sunny day, you just have to keep going.
That's right. And that's the biggest piece of what I'm trying to do and get out there to everybody is it sucks sometimes. And I go through these terrible times and these really low points, but, you know, just keep going, you know, it's not easy. And I don't try to make it as though it is. I mean, I definitely have my struggles.
Through the PTSD being diagnosed, how did Trigger, who's here today, how did he come into your life?
Yeah, so this is a really cool story. So started going through my mental health about a year in, and I knew I personally didn't want to do the medication route. I was trying to fight that without
it. Right, because you said it could lead to addiction.
Right. Or anything. Correct. And like, I just personally just wasn't for me. So I saw another reservist who had a dog vested, and I said, where did you get your dog? And he said, I got it through a program called Northwest Battle Buddies. And it's an organization, a nonprofit. Well, it just so happened to be right up the street from my house.
No way.
Yes. Yeah, so I asked my mental health doctor. I said, what do you think? You know, because you had to have recommendation letters. They had to have all kinds of things.
And yeah. A lot of paperwork.
Right, you do. Yeah. And Chuck wrote one of them for me. Once you got into the program, then Shannon, the CEO, I'm also a part of the board of directors for Battle Buddies. Now I'm the first veteran to be part of that.
Whoa, congrats.
Thank you. Yes, yeah, so just to help with that. But they're an awesome organization that does great things for us. They gift us these dogs for no money at all.
Really? I was going to ask, what is the cost involved?
$25,000 to $30,000 a dog. And they've done 200 veterans to date.
Whoa.
Yep.
That is awesome.
And so I went up there, I submitted my package, and then they call you when the group's ready, right? So Shannon would marry you up with your dog. I didn't pick Trigger. So she looks at your background and what you have going on. I was still active duty. And let me just get back one step. I did not know if I should go to get a dog because I was still in the Navy. It's not typical to have a service dog. If you're non-deployable, they don't need you anymore. So my commanding officer asked me, he goes, are you sure you want to do this, Chief? And I said, absolutely. I'm not going to make it. He supported me. He said, you go do your thing, because I was off 6 weeks. So I would go 6 weeks every day to train with my dog. And that command supported me like no other. They had my six the entire time. So when I got to that point, I would
go. Do you want to shout him out? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Commander Balderson. Thank you.
Commander Balderson. Yeah, shout out. That's awesome. Yeah, because I mean, that's big for a big step for anyone, and for you to say, look, this, I need to do this.
Yep.
I got to do it. And then for him to support you like that.
Yep. He did.
Yeah.
Yep. Him and my XO. So they supported that piece and all my troops, obviously, because they had to step up. So once I got into the program, you go with your dog every day. They take you in situations you don't want to be in public. And there's all kinds of things that happen there, right? There's about 10 of us. And Trigger is the only Trigger. Like, there is no other. He is a rescue. He was in a shelter. And they actually went and got him brought him and trained him. And so I will say we saved each other's life, you know.
Definitely. So Trigger, he was not in the service.
That's correct.
Okay, because I know sometimes, you know, service members that have a canine with them.
That's correct.
Then get to bring them home.
That's
and things
right.
like that. But he was
Yes.
In a shelter.
Yes.
So you definitely saved your...
Yes.
Yourselves together. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And wow. None of the dogs in the program are prior military dogs. So okay. They're all either bred for well, that's fantastic, purpose. Though. Yep, yeah. Or gifted. Yeah, it's really awesome. Once I started going through that process, you know, those veterans, we became like this... friends, like, because it was so crazy from Vietnam up until the current war, how much we all were so similar. It was so crazy. And during that, it was not easy. Like, we had people passing out, throwing up because they put us in situations. And I say situations, the mall, going in an elevator triggered some people.
Tight spaces.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was just depending on the person. Then mm-hmm. These dogs aren't trained necessarily like, oh, Rebecca's triggers are XYZ. No, they're trained all the same baseline. But it's funny how the dogs really relate to their people.
Yeah.
Because some of the dogs will wake their people up from nightmares. Like, Trigger will literally lay between my legs in public and watch my back. Like,
wow.
That's just he what knows. He does.
Yeah.
He does.
He knows. He's watching your six.
That's and exactly it.
Like, so when we first met, let's throw it back and then we'll pick up.
Yeah.
It was at the Lebanon Expo Center. You were there. You had a booth. You had a setup because you have... your company, which is Trigger 22, based off of the name, it's based off of Trigger.
That's right.
So that's how my wife and I, Courtney, we were there just looking around, just shopping. And when I saw, you know, you being a veteran, I was never in, but I have family and friends, good friends that have served. I was like, we got to support, you know, we got to buy. I even have your wristband is over on my one bottle of whiskey because awesome. The band faded a little bit, but I didn't want to throw it away. I'm like, I got to keep that. And then of course we went and bought shirts and hats and things like that just to support and spread the word because I don't think it's talked about enough. So I think what you're doing is phenomenal.
Thank you.
And let's now get into Triggered 22 come about.
Yeah. Retirement's coming and I have to, what am I doing after retirement? I knew what I was doing. I was going to start this company and I was going to help other veterans who were going through what I went through and how difficult it was for me to start talking about this. I had no idea when I got my dog and went back to my office what the reaction was going to be, right? Because now I have a vested dog that says I have PTSD. So I walk in and people were like, wow, that's freaking awesome. I wish I would have known instead of drinking. I wish half my command then went to mental health. Because now Chief's doing it. It's cool. It's okay. Like, it's okay not to be okay. And that's the truth. And so and my dog's with me all the time. And he wears this vest with my diagnosis. I don't let it define me, but it's part of who I am. And that's okay now, right? That wasn't, but it is. And I've accepted that. When I started Trigger 22, my biggest mission was to let people know it's okay to talk about it. Go get help if you need it. The other premise of my business is Triggered for my dog, but 22 vets commit suicide every single day. So the 22 is bringing awareness to that. And when I tell most people that at our shows that we do, they are shocked. So I would love to have the merch and stuff. I just, everyone knows too, Trigger 22 is an LLC. I'm not a nonprofit. But wearing our merch gives people like, oh, what does that mean? And then we can talk about it, right? And
yes.
And I just, that's my biggest mission is to let people know to stop surviving and start living your life, whatever that means for you. You know, stop hiding in the house and get out there and try and that you're not alone. You're not. If I can share a story.
Please, yes.
So doing this, I have a website. We're on Facebook and all these things. But I put out there some days, you know, if you want to follow me on there, but no, I don't post every day, but it's not all roses and flowers some days. Sometimes I post my struggles of that day. I have received numerous feedback from different things, and I'd like to share one of those. A gentleman I didn't serve with, but he was in the Air Force and I was in the Navy, sent me a message. He goes, I've been meaning to tell you this for a while. I wanted to let you know. He had a friend from the Vietnam era who sent him these really, really weird texts. And he was like, I'm not sure what these are and stuff. And he goes, I don't know what to do. And he said, I looked down, I saw my Trigger 22 t-shirt. And he goes, I'm going to call the cops to get him checked on.
Yeah.
And he did. And he had a knife ready to commit suicide. He had his plan ready to go. They got there on time. They saved him. And he's been doing better ever since.
That's phenomenal.
Now, I don't take that as a kudos to me. What I take that is the merch is making a difference because people are remembering what we're doing and what our mission is.
Right, right. Even if you just save one.
That's right.
You know, that means everything.
That's right.
It's great what you're doing now. At the events, what do people say? What do they ask? I will admit, I think Chuck was there. I'm pretty sure it was Chuck. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it was Chuck at the time, but... And again, I assumed It was Chuck. I thought he was a serviceman. So what do people say, or how do they react when they're like, oh, it's you, it's Rebecca?
Oh, yeah, they're shocked. Yeah. Every time. They always talk to him first, and I'm like, it's okay, but it's me. I even have my picture and my story up, and a picture in Iraq, you know, and people are like, that's you? Yeah, it's me. We clean up well. But yeah, I mean, good reactions. And I was kind of skeptical of that too. Doing those shows has been such a change in my own life, because people come up there and tell their personal stories. Tears are shed all over those shirts, yeah. And it's very emotional. People also, I want to say, donate to me, right? They'll just say, can I give a donation? I don't necessarily want a shirt. Any donations we receive go into Trigger 22 to get merch and stuff, and here's why. We had a Marine come up to us at the Leesport show. He looked a mess, and he was drinking. He just had a DUI on his motorcycle, and he was in bad times. Couldn't afford any of our stuff. And I said, you know what, man? If you wear this sweatshirt and remember what it is, I'd love for you to have it. And we gifted it to him. That's it. We came back to Leesport about 6 months later. That Marine didn't even recognize him, came up to me and goes, do you remember me? And he was doing great. So it matters. It's making a difference to let people know they're not alone.
You're having an impact.
It is. Yeah. It's super having an impact. And this is just in our small community. But yeah, people are a little bit shocked or don't realize it's you that's doing it. But when they do, they're like, oh my gosh. And they love to talk about it. You know, people want to talk about it. Yeah. So I think that's really good.
And I'm sure hear your story, and it's neat to see and hear that others in the service are then coming up and sharing their stories with you. Now, how far do you travel and set up, you know, Ford events and things like that?
Yeah. So we are doing actually the Lebanon Expo this Saturday. We got into the summer show. Okay. So we'll be there. Leesport, we do. We've done a Mutz and Motors and Stevens Fire Company, mostly local right now. We get invited to different shows throughout, but that's about far as 45 minutes to an hour is what I've gone. But yeah. Now we are located in four locations too, like Artisan Mills and Lidditz. We're in there.
Okay.
The Prussian Arcade in Mannheim. We rent a space from them, House on Willow in Adamstown, and then we're at a farmhouse, Primitive Farmhouse, I believe it's called, or Farmhouse Primitives in Lancaster. So I rent spaces from all of them, because that way, in between shows, our story's still going. What's really interesting about that, just the other week, I had an order from Tacoma, Washington. Well, I was stationed out there, right? We get them from all over. But it was just weird. She said, I was in Lidditz, and I saw your story there. And wow. My dad has PTSD, so she ordered for her father.
What a small world.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
I mean, across the country.
Yeah.
Impacting someone across the country. Wow. What would you say motivates you day in and day out to be the best version of yourself and also promote Triggered 22?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it started within for me to be the best of me, because for about 3 years, I wasn't. I wasn't the best of me at all. In fact, I was struggling to still be here today. So I don't take that lightly. So every day is a gift and a blessing. And the fact that I get these reach backs or we do these shows completely motivates me again to keep fighting on what we're fighting for and for myself not to give up. Because it definitely goes through my mind sometimes, like I just can't do this, or it's too heavy. And then I'll remember or see their face, or I get an email from someone and I'm like, this is what we're fighting for. And I can't quit. How can I quit? You know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It drives me to keep pushing, and my heart's in this.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a business. It is, but it's not about the money.
It's a passion.
It's 100% a passion. So yeah, I mean, that's my motivation. And you know, there's been times when people couldn't be with me, but Trigger's with me, and Trigger keeps me going, because I'm like, if I'm not here, what does he do? That he's looking to me for all those answers, right? I mean, that's my dog. That's my battle buddy, you know? So he's another motivation for me to keep pushing.
But you can't leave him behind.
No.
I mean, you're one of the same, really.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Phenomenal. You did bring Trigger with you. Chuck, you have your sweatshirt, hat, and there's going to be pictures on American Grown Podcast, Facebook, and Instagram. You know, normally I ask the guests, like, the items that you bring with, what are they and kind of what do they mean to you?
Yeah. So I brought, obviously, my dog, and what that means to me, obviously, like I said, I mean, a service dog, a dog in general, people know what they bring to their life, right? So these dogs that are trained professionally that can go with me everywhere, I'm just going to tell you, it saves our lives, because there's times when you're not expecting to have a trigger or an episode, it happens. And when you're alone and nobody else is in the car with you, what do? That's who I turn to.
Yeah.
That's who licks my face until I can smile again or say, I'm okay, buddy, I got it. But he definitely is concerned, right? It's a life-saving tool that Battle Buddies is gifting us and other organizations as well. And then I brought my merch just to show what we're doing and what it's about. Yep, it's merch, it's sweatshirts, it's hats. but it's the message and the mission that we're trying to get behind that. So that's really what we're pushing for. When you guys buy the merch or wear it, or people say, oh, what does that mean? And you guys tell the story, you're helping spread our mission and for other veterans too. And then I brought with me in my bag, I brought my dad's, his wings that he gave me when he was in his parachute wings. Oh, wow. I've had them since boot camp. In boot camp, they make you throw all your personal items away, and that's the one thing they let me keep. So I've had that from the day I went in through my tour in Iraq, and I brought them with today just to show the longevity of that and what that meant to me during my time, you know. And I have a lot of family that is military. Myself, my brother was a Marine. My dad was in the Army. My nephew was Air Force. We were represented well, you know. We love our country and serving, and so we're just trying to keep going, you know. Oh, and I would like to add, AJ, if you're out there, my brother who's a Marine, so proud of you. Took you a long time, but he's getting help, and he's fighting his demons right now, you know, with what he's dealing with. And Chuck and I really have kind of not pushed, but been there for him, because it's really easy to give up when you're trying to get help. It's hard, right? And you don't want to. But he's been doing really great with that, and I just want to tell him how proud we are of him too.
Yeah, shout out to AJ. Keep going, man. Keep going. So now, how can our listeners connect with you, Rebecca, and then follow along on your journey? How can they own some of this awesome merch, and again, keep spreading awareness?
So if you're local, we do go to different locations. I do put that out. It's on my website. That's trigger22.com. you can check that out. My merch is on there too. I also have Instagram, which is TriggeredPTSD22, Facebook, which you can look me up at Rebecca Gundrum, or you can do Trigger22 as well, and then I'm on LinkedIn as well. So any of those places, I post to all three sites when I do post anything. All my new merch, like the sweatshirts and stuff, I oftentimes put them up on there before I get them on the website, because that takes me a little time, but just so you can see what's up and coming. But I try to put my shows on the website, so if you're local, you can come to the vendors, you know, and get them. If you are local too, you can opt to not pay for delivery, but we can deliver it to you and you don't have to pay for postage.
Perfect. So before we close out, is there anything else you would like the listeners to know?
Yeah, I just want to, you know, give a shout to anyone, veterans specifically. I can, you know, I relate to you, but anybody who's going through mental health, or, you know, having bad times or depression, anxiety or anything, don't think you're good or don't need help. Go get help if you need it. Talk to somebody. And I'm always available. I am not a counselor or any means, but if you ever need anything, people have hit me up, or just, you know, need to know somebody's there. People are there and people care.
If they need to talk to somebody, they can reach out.
Yeah. And there is actually on my website, a chaplain that reached out to me. She works at LGH, Lancaster General Hospital. Her contact is on my website. She is more than willing to talk to anybody who needs it.
Well, I'll put your website link in the bio of the podcast. So, you know, this is recorded on June 22nd, and hopefully, you know, we can make a difference in some people's lives. And if they're going through it, hopefully they hear this. So, you know, if you're a listener and you have friends, family, share it. You know, share this story, share Rebecca's story, and let's get awareness out there to really impact some people.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Rebecca Gundrum, owner of Triggered 22 on the American Grown Podcast in the Color Tech Creative Solutions Studios. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors. Haynes Auto Detailing, run by owner Josh Haynes, offers a professional service that is sure to have your vehicle shining from wheel to wheel. My wife and I both trust Josh with our personal vehicles, and believe me, with two kids, the back seats tend to look like a hot mess. But after a trip to Haynes Auto Detailing, the vehicles look better than brand new, both inside and out. Message Haynes Auto Detailing on Facebook or call 717-679-3673 to get your vehicle looking right today.
Hostler Engraving is your local source for unique, quality-driven laser-engraved gifts for all occasions. Place an order today by visiting our Facebook page at Hostler Engraving. You won't be disappointed.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.